I'm going to turn the tape on. We are in still the beginning of our discussion of Perek Zion. So just to put ourselves back into the focus, I think last week we left up with a question, correct?
About the 20 years.
About the missing 20 years. We didn't offer answers to the 20 years. Or the how to fit the 20 years into the sequence of Tanakh. We didn't come up with any answers, right? We just raised the question. So let me review the question, and then we will...
Ask what's the question.
What?
I was going to ask what's the question.
Right. Let me review the question, and then we will get back into this. So let's go back to the beginning of Perek Zion. Remember the Perek Vav, the Aron gets taken to... after the destruction of Beit Shemesh, the Aron gets taken to... Kiryat Yarim, and then we find the following Pasuk after a gap of sorts in between Pasuk Aleph and Pasuk Bet of Perek Zion. Vayhi miyom shevet ha'aron b'Kiryat Yarim vayirbu hayamim vayu asrim shana. The Aron sat in Kiryat Yarim, as it was when the Aron sat in Kiryat Yarim, days, years passed. It was 20 years, meaning 20 years past the Aaron sitting in Kiryat Yarim. Vayinahu kol Beit Yisrael acharei Hashem. Israel pined for, went after, began to follow or seek after God. Another pause between paragraph break between Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Shmuel kol Beit Yisrael lemor im b'chol levavchem atem shavim al Hashem. It's a good parak to read before Rosh Hashanah. If you return to God with all your heart, hasiru et elohei hanechar mitochachem v'ashtarot, remove all the false idols from your midst. Ve'achinu levavchem el Hashem v'ivdu levado. Focus your heart, turn your attention to God, your focus to God with all your b'chol levavchem, your whole heart, and serve him alone, uniquely. Vayatzel etchem miad plishtim, and then he will save you, spare you from the hands of the plishtim. Vayasidu b'nei Yisrael etabalim v'et ha'ashtarot v'yavdu et Hashem levado. Indeed, Shmuel encourages them. They remove the ba'alim and the ashtarot. They remove the idols. They serve God by himself, alone, loyal to God. Another paragraph break. Another pause. And then, V'yom Shmuel kivtzu kol Yisrael mitzbata v'et belo ba'atchem al Hashem. The rest of the parak, which we will read another time. So, of course, the primary focus of these opening verses is the tshuva that B'nai Yisrael seem to initiate and Shmuel's response to it, engaging them and directing them to this process. But in the midst, we have this statement that requires explanation, that the Aron sat in Kiryat Yarim for 20 years, and B'nai Yisrael began to pine, to yearn for God. The reason why that is significant, on the face of it, the simple reading of the text is that 20 years later, B'nai Yisrael are now turning around and saying, okay, 20 years ago the Aron went to Kiryat Yarim, what's the story? And we are a 20-year gap between Perek Vav and Perek Zion. The problem we had with that is that our anchors of biblical chronology seem to defy that interpretation. And I shared with you that there are basically two primary anchors that sort of navigate us through the period of Tanakh. Because we don't have events recorded post-Chumash, we don't really have events recorded by their year. And so we look for places where it takes significant events and links them to other significant events, that the most significant being Yetziat Mitzrayim. And post in the Yehoshua, we have two major events that are defined by the reference to Yetziat Mitzrayim. The first is source number one, the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Vayhi b'shmonim shana v'arba meot shana l'tzeit b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim b'shana ha'revi'it b'chodesh ziv v'chodesh ha'shani l'mloch shlomo Yisrael v'yiven ha'bayit la'Hashem. The Beit HaMikdash is built 480 years after B'nai Yisrael leave Egypt. The fourth year of Shlomo HaMelech's reign. The rest of it is not our issue for now. And that is when the Beit HaMikdash began its construction. That means that from Yetziat Mitzrayim till Binyan Beis HaMikdash is 480 years. Okay, that's our first biblical anchor. That's our first anchor of chronology. From Yetziat Mitzrayim to Binyan Beit HaMikdash, 480 years. In absolute terms, although, again, Chumash never tells us, this is what we were discussing before, Chumash never tells us dates in the Sefer Bereishit, but just by calculating the ages of every generation from the Adam HaRishon till Avraham, we come up with the fact that from Briyat HaOlam, Abraham is born in the year 1948. In 1948, that's the birth of Abraham. 500 years later, according to Chazal, is Yetziat Mitzrayim. That number is derived from Abraham being 100 years old when he has Yitzchak, and the 400-year calculation from Brit Ben Aptarim is calculated from the birth of Yitzchak. That brings us to the year of 2448 from creation for Yetziat Mitzrayim. I add 480 years, it brings me to 2928 for the year of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. I don't need to know the years. I'm more interested in the chronology of the history. The other anchor point in this story is source 2. B'shevet Yisrael b'cheshbon uvivnoteo v'aror uvivnoteo b'chol ha'arim asher al yedei Arnon 300 shana.
That is Yiftach's conversation with the king of Ammon, who claimed that we stole the land that was conquered from Sichon and Og in the last year of Moshe's life. So in year 40 of Yetziat Mitzrayim, we had this great battle with Sichon and Og. 300 years later, Yiftach says to Ammon, who's claiming that land back, where were you for the last 300 years? Right. All these 300 years we sat in this land, what were you doing, twiddling your thumbs? So statute of limitation on claims, on land claims, has run out, says Yiftach, and it's now 300 years later. But that tells me that from Yetziat Mitzrayim, or I should say from Sichon, Yetziat Mitzrayim plus 40 till Yiftach, Yetziat Mitzrayim plus 40, right? 40 years of the desert till Yiftach is 300 years. Or, to put it into a common frame of reference, from Yetziat Mitzrayim to Yiftach is 340 years. If from Sichon to Yiftach is 300 years, from Yetziat Mitzrayim to Yiftach is 340 years. Agreed? See what I just did? I don't want to be accused of fudging numbers. Right? If Yiftach claims that the battle with Sichon was 300 years ago, the battle of Sichon was year 40 of Yetziat Mitzrayim, was the last year of Yetziat Mitzrayim. So from Yetziat Mitzrayim to Yiftach is 340 years. I just want a common frame of reference. Okay, that means that from Yiftach till the building of the Beis HaMikdash is a total of 140 years. From Yiftach to the Beis HaMikdash. So now, working backwards, what I'm looking for is the length of time for Sefer Shmuel. In between Yiftach and the building of the Beis HaMikdash, I have a number of events, including the end of Shoftim, all of Sefer Shmuel, and the first 4 years of Shlomo. Because the Beis HaMikdash is built in the fourth year of Shlomo's reign. So
So into these 140 years, I have to put, who comes after Yiftach? There's a whole bunch of little shoftim that come after Yiftach. We don't know anything about them by chronology. We're going to skip them for a moment. A whole bunch of little shoftim, but minimally, I have the 40 years of Shimshon. And in the book of Shmuel, I have 40 years of Eli, accounted for, with four Shmuel if it comes to the picture. I have the story of Shmuel, the story of Shaul. Correct? That's Shmuel Aleph. And then in Shmuel Bet, I have 40 years of David. And then 4 years of Shlomo. So if I take out my fixed numbers, 40 years of Shimshon, 40 years of Eli, 40 years of David, 4 years of Shlomo, 4, 8, 12, 124 years accounted for. Right? 4 years of Shimshon, 40 years of Eli, 40 years of David, 4 years of Shlomo. 4, 8, 12, 124 years accounted for. That leaves me, of my 140 years, what am I left with? What's 140 minus 124?
16.
So in those 16 years, I have to put the entire story of Shmuel, Shaul, and the civil war between Shaul and David. Basically, all of Sefer Shmuel Aleph. And now, in the midst of it all, the Pasuk says that between chapter 6 and chapter 7, I have a gap of 20 years. Where am I going to put 20 years gap when the entire history has to take only 16 years? Understand the problem. There are several points in Sefer Shmuel where the chronology doesn't fit. This is one of them. There's another, we'll see, if you take a look at the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel. Did I show you this pasuk last week? No. The beginning of Perek Yud Gimel. First pasuk, literally. Perek Yud Gimel, Shmuel Aleph, Yud Gimel Aleph, 13:1. Very strange pasuk. But to see how strange it is, you have to read it in the Hebrew, not the English. Because your English is already going to interpret this pasuk in order to resolve the difficulty. Right. What's the pasuk? What does the pasuk say? The pasuk says literally, Ben Yud Gimel Pasuk Aleph, Ben Shana Shaul Bimalcho Ushtei Shani Malacha Yisrael. Let me show you something before we get to that. Before I read this pasuk, actually, just turn for a minute to Malachim Bet. Almost anywhere in Malachim Bet. Let's just take an example. Perek Yud Dalet.
Lachim Bet.
9:12. Okay. Lachim Bet, Perek Yud Dalet. Just first pasuk. Bishnat Shtaim liyoash ben Yoachaz melech Yisrael malach Amatziyahu ben Yoash melech Yehuda. Amatziyahu ben Yoash comes to the throne in the second year of Yoash ben Yoachaz. Not an issue. Next pasuk bet. Ben 25 shana haya bimolcho ve'eslim v'teisha shana malach biYushalayim. What does that mean? What two pieces of information is the pasuk telling me?
Well, how
how old he was when he started?
How old he is when he ascends the throne, and
how long he was the king.
How long he was the king. Go back a perek.
Which pasuk we have?
That was perek Yudalid, Melachim Bet, perek Yudalid, pasuk Bet. I'm just going to show you a handful of examples. Okay, perek Yudalid, pasuk Bet. Everybody see that pasuk? Just stylistically. Ben, 25 shana b'molcho, 29 shana malach b'Yishalayim. However he was 25 years old when he ascended the throne, and he reigned for 29 years. Whoever it was. Go back a perek, perek Yud Gimel. Pasuk Yud. No, wrong pasuk. One second. Let's go to go forward. Go to Perek Tetvav. Give you another example. Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Aleph. Bishnat Eslim Vishavish Nali Ravam Melech Yisrael Malach Azariah Ben Amatzia Melech Yehuda. The first Pasuk is a cross-reference between two kingdoms, so I'm not interested in that. But the second Pasuk, this Amatzia Melech Yehuda, Ben Shesh Esrei Shana Ayah B'molcho V'chamishim Vishtayim Shana Malach B'Yushalayim. How old was he when he ascended the throne? How many years did he reign? Two pieces of information. Those, when a melech starts, the first piece of information, what we are told in the Book of Kings is, more often than not, it's two pieces of information. How old was he when he ascended the throne? And how many years he served. That's how Sefer Melachim is very fixed chronological structure. There are places where where there are contradictions, but overall it's a fixed chronological structure. I know exactly how old people were. I know when they were ascended to the throne in relation to each kingdom. Okay? We could go on. There are other examples. For now, I think we have another example, Pasuk Lamed Bet, Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Lamed Bet, or Lamed Gimel, referring to Yotam, Ben 25 Shana Yabe Mocho, B'Sheish Esrei Shana Malach B'Yerushalayim. Perek Tetzayim, Pasuk Bet is when Ben 25 Shana Achaz B'Mocho, B'Sheish Esrei Shana Malach B'Yerushalayim. Does everybody see that? It's a pattern in the Sefer Melachim that's very consistent. Now look at Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Aleph, without looking at the English. Ben Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Aleph, and look at the Hebrew without looking at the English. Ben Shana Shaul B'Malcho, Ushtei Shani Malach Yisrael. Everybody understand the problem? Translate that without looking at a translation, translate it consistently in the pattern that every other similar pasuk in Tanakh is written. And what would it translate as?
Shaul was
1 year old when he ascended the throne, and he reigned for 2 years. I did not pull any optical illusions. I showed you four different examples in Sefer Melachim that are structured exactly the same way. The first pasuk of a king tells me how old he is when he ascends the throne and how many years he reigned. This is the first pasuk of the king of the reign of King Saul. Shaul ben Shanai Abu Malcho, Shtei Shani Malach B'Yishalayim.
Did you get different authors?
What difference does it make? Number one, it wouldn't make much of a difference because it's still written by right, the structure of Sefer Shmuel, it's the beginning of Malchus, right? And number two, I still have a problem with the translation. Ben Shana Shaul B'Molcho. Translate it.
I mean, it's obvious.
Shaul was a year old when he became king. Doesn't work. Nobody's going to suggest that Shaul is a year old. So we have to figure out a way to reinterpret that pasuk. Whatever we do with it, we'll get to Perek Yud Gimel, we'll play with the phrase. But clearly, nobody's going to accept a interpretation that Shaul was a year old when he ascended the throne. Agreed? But that's what it says. It also says that he reigned for 2 years. Now, how you slice and dice the story of King Saul, there's too much information there for him to have reigned for only 2 years. From the time he ascends the throne in Perek Tet and Yud until the time he dies in battle with the Plishtim in the end of Shmuel Aleph, there's many wars, many campaigns, a constant civil war with David HaMelech. There's no way to squeeze all that into 2 years. It doesn't work. So no matter how I deal with this, I've got a problem with a mystery with the chronology of this pasuk. So there are places in Sefer Shmuel where the chronology issue constantly becomes a source of not only conversation, but a problem in terms of understanding the sequence. And I shared that with you to understand the depths of the issue. Here I have 20 years of blank at a time when the entire history, according to the literal reading of it, is supposed to only take 16 years, of which Shaul is already 2, at least. Chazal say Ben Shana means 1 year he reigned together with Shmuel, and then another 2 years he reigned without Shmuel, whatever that means. So there's 3 years, but either way. I'm grasping at straws to try to figure out where I put these 16 years and where I put the 20 years in the middle. That's where I think we left off last week with the question, correct? All right. So whenever we're dealing with biblical chronology, there are basically two schools of thought. And we need to understand them both because they're relevant to the continuation of the story. If you go through Chumash with Rashi, Parsha Shavua to Chumash, learning, or whatever you do it, Rashi, the art school, however you want, what you will find is that Rashi has a certain consistent pattern of interpretation of biblical events based on a Tannaitic work that is quoted in the Gemara often called Seder Olam Rabbah. Seder Olam Rabbah was a medrash. It's a early medrash. It's a very early medrash. It's a medrash that goes back to the time of the Tanaim, period of the Mishnah, which goes through, literally, that's what it does. It goes through Seder Olam, the story of the world, the history of the world. It basically takes all the biblical events from Breshit till the end of Chumash, end of Navi, and identifies the chronology of every event. So, for example, the whole notion of, let's say, the 400 years calculation of Yetziat Mitzrayim, of Shibud Mitzrayim. Mm-hmm. Hashem says to Avraham, Ger Yezrecha Be'eretz Olehem V'Avadum V'Inu Otam Arba Mayot Shana, your children will be strangers in a strange land. They will be enslaved and afflicted for 400 years. Says Rashi, that 400 years on the face of it seems to mean that we will be in Egypt in slavery for 400 years. Says Rashi, that cannot be. Cannot be that we were in Egypt for 400 years. Why not? Pasuk says we'll be enslaved, we'll be in exile for 400 years. Says Rashi, it cannot be that we were in Egypt for 400 years. Why not?
Doesn't the Torah indicate how long they were in Egypt?
No. Well, yes. Torah says we were in Egypt for 400 years. Twice. Three times, actually. It says it in Breshit, and then twice in Shemot. In one place it says they left Egypt after being in Egypt for 400 years, and another place it says we left after being in Egypt for 430 years. In all three places, Rashi says the same thing. Cannot be from when Yaakov comes down to Mitzrayim, That cannot be the beginning of 400 years. There is no way, says Rashi, that we were in Egypt for 400 years. Why not?
Based on the chronology of certain people that we know that came out with the Egyptians, right?
Correct. He has a very simple source. It's based on this medrash called Seder Olam Rabbah, and the medrash says the following, and Rashi quotes it in all three places. In the beginning of Perek Vav of Sefer Shemot, we find the chronology of the ages of Shevet Levi, of all the generations from Shevet Levi, from Levi through till Moshe. In the sequencing, in the context of trying to explain who Moshe and Aaron are, the Torah tells us how the lineage of Moshe and Aaron. Beginning of Parshat Vayera. There, it says how old Levi was when he had Kehat, and how old Kehat was when he had Amram, and how old Amram was when he had Moshe. It also tells me how many years in total Levi lived, and how many years in total Kehat lived, and how many years in total Amram lived, and Moshe was 80 when he stood before Paro. Says Rashi, if you add up the total number of years, forget how old they were when they began each generation, if you add the total number of years of the life of Levi, Kehat, Amram, and the 80 of Moshe, you don't reach 400. And Levi comes down to Mitzrayim as an adult, and there's always overlap between one generation and the next. Right? You don't beget the next generation on your deathbed. So even if I literally took the numbers, Kehat lives whatever, Levi lives whatever it is, 110 years, Levi, this one lives 100, if you add it all up, you're short on the 400. So there's no way they could have lived in Mitzrayim for 400 years, says Rashi, because the lineage is Levi, Kehat, Amram, Moshe, and in those four generations, there's no way that spanned 400 years.
Isn't the 400 years just a prophecy? Prophecies don't have to come true?
No, but it says twice in Sefer Shemot. First of all, prophecies have to come true. But besides that, it says Shemot... But in Shemot, it says twice that they were, after 400 years, they left Egypt. Or after Moshav b'nei Yisrael, asher yashu be'eretz Mitzrayim, shloshim ve'arba miot shana. They lived in Mitzrayim for 400, it's a pasuk in Sefer Shemot. They were in Mitzrayim for 430 years. Says Rashi, not possible.
Maybe it felt like 400 years.
Chishev at the Kates, we can do all kinds of creative things with it once we get into the world of Medrash. So Rashi's understanding is, what do we do with the 400 years? I have no choice. I have to start the 400-year calculation early. I can't start from the time Yaakov goes down to Mitzrayim, because I don't have enough years for the generations. So what does Rashi do? He starts earlier. He says the 400 years calculation, counting 400 years, starts from the birth of Yitzchak. Why start from the birth of Yitzchak? Because it says your children will be strangers in a land that's not theirs. Be'eretz lo lahem. Well, Yitzchak didn't own the land of Israel. It wasn't their land yet. They didn't get it as a possession, only as a promise. And therefore, once Abraham has children, who are, even if they're in the land of Israel, they're still in the Eretz lo lahem, and so I can calculate the 400 years starting there. That's Rashi's interpretation. It's based on this Medrash Seder Olam. That's where he comes to a conclusion that we were in Mitzrayim for 210 years. But there's nowhere in the pasuk it says 400. But it's based on the fact that I have only four generations between Levi and Moshe. And those the ages of those generations we have. So biblical chronology is as traditional chronology of Tanakh as we have it is based on this Medrash Seder Olam. But understand, and this is very important, it's based on psukim and interpretation of those psukim, meaning it's based on what we would call parshanut. Take psukim and then try to understand them and interpret them based on this methodology. The moment you're dealing with facts that are based on parshanut, then parshanut is open to interpretation or different opinions. And so Rashi's opinion, while quoted often and pretty much consistently, is not the only opinion out there. So, for example, comes along the Ibn Ezra and others, and just working over Yitzhak Mitzrayim as an example, I'll come back to our case in a second, says the Ibn Ezra, I'll give you a different solution. You want a solution to the 400 years in Egypt? I'll give you a different solution.
Rashi says you have to start from Yitzchak to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Why? Because if I start from Levi, Kahat, Amram, Moshe, is less than 400. Agreed? Comes along the Eben Ezra and says, you want to fiddle with this number? And how far back you go? I'll give you a better solution. You're assuming that that's your lineage. Who says? Why can't your lineage look like this? Levi, Kahat, Amram, Moshe. Generations that are irrelevant are not mentioned. I can only work off parshanut based on what the Torah tells me. I can't work off what's not there. But what's not there doesn't necessarily mean it didn't happen.
It doesn't say he begot.
No, it just says that, well, it says Amram is ben kahat. But b'nei banim hareim kebanim. In Tanakh, very often you have missing generations. Yeah, I'll give an example. You all know it. Purim, Megillat Esther, Mordechai. What's the lineage of Mordechai?
Binyamin.
Mordechai, Ben,
Shimi
Yair, Ben, Shim'i, Ben, Kish,
Shimini.
Ish, Yair, Mordechai, Ben, Yair, Ben, Shim'i,
Ben, Yair, Ben, Shim'i, Ben,
Ben, Kish, Ish, Shimini, correct. Now, Shimi is Shimi ben Gera. Kish is father of Shaul ben Kish. How is Shaul, who we are going to get to, Shaul ben Kish? Mordechai is a direct descendant of Shaul. That's a fact. Yishimini. What's the problem?
He's not mentioned.
I skipped Shaul because I went to Kish. That's okay. What's the problem?
How does he get to Binyamin?
Of course, they're from Sheva Binyamin. How many generations here is described between Kish and Mordechai?
Four.
Mordechai, Ben Yair, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish.
Four.
Correct? Total of four generations. That would mean that one of these people has to be several hundred years old. Or each all of them have to be several hundred years old, because between Shaul HaMelech and Mordechai is well over 400-500 years. If I can stick 500 years into four generations here, I can stick 500 years into 400 years into four generations here. I just do the same trick. There are missing generations here. So why is it described thus? Because they're important points along the Yichus that tell me connections to various events in Tanakh. So Mordechai ben Yair is probably a descendant of Shimi, who's a descendant of Kish.
But not direct.
But not direct. Ben in Tanakh doesn't necessarily mean direct. So the Eben Ezra says, if I don't have to be direct, then I don't have to worry about how many generations I have between Levi and Moshe, and I don't have to take Psukim out of the Pshat. 400 years is 400 years in Mitzrayim. So you want to know where to put 165 years of Jewish history back in place? According to the Eben Ezra, all of Tanakh is 190 years later than Rashi puts it. We're starting 190 years later, because according to Eben Ezra, Netziat Mitzrayim is 190 years later than Rashi's calculation. Biblical chronology in Tanakh is based on parshanut. It's based on taking psukim and trying to understand them. It's not based on a magic masoret from Har Sinai that says this has to have been in this year.
understand this piece of it.
Are there no people that are actually, we know, that they thought of skip up generation who came out of with Yitzhak Mitzrayim besides Moshe?
Say that again?
Is there anybody else besides Moshe that we have their chronology, that we have their...
No, but we have, well, sort of, the Shvatim, but the Divrayamim. So, for example, in Shevet Ephraim, between Ephraim and Yeshua ben Nun, between Ephraim who comes down to Mitzrayim, or who was born in Mitzrayim, and Yeshua ben Nun who leaves Mitzrayim, in Sefer Divrayamim, there are 8 generations listed. The same period of time, Divrayamim has 8 generations for Shevet Ephraim. So, again, I can play with the numbers, but it's much easier to stick 400 years into 8 generations than it is into 4 generations. Again, this is we veered way off topic, but I just wanted to show you that when it comes to biblical chronology, different interpretations can put events at significantly different pictures, because we're trying to put the puzzle back together. We don't have fixed numbers. The only fixed numbers we have are Yetziat Mitzrayim is the Binyan Beis Hamikdash 480 years after Yetziat Mitzrayim, and the 300 years from Yiftach to Yetziat, 340 years from Yetziat Mitzrayim to Yiftach. So to solve this mystery, there are basically 2 schools of thought, the 20 years that we're talking about. One is the approach of Seder Olam Rabbah. I gave you all of this introduction because I wanted you to understand what Seder Olam Rabbah is and how critically important it is. It's the anchor, pretty much, to all of the basis for Chazal's interpretation of chronology of Tanakh, Rashi's interpretation on the heels of Chazal. The traditional interpretation, I would say, is that is recorded in Seder Olam Rabbah. And there, in source 3, which is quoted in the Gemara, you have a solution to this problem. Tana. Kishemet Eli HaKohen Chorva Shilo Ubao Lenov. This Gemara is trying to identify how long the Mishkan stood in Shiloh. Happens to be the subject here, but for our purposes it's going to address our issue too. When Eli died, the Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed and the Mizbeach went to Nov. Nov Irakonim, famously, we'll learn all about Nov Irakonim. It was famous because... Right, because that's where Shaul killed all the Kohanim for harboring David in the civil war between them. Right? Mizbeach is in Nov. So first of all, this line of the Gemara tells you exactly what we have already interpreted and understood many times, which is that the Mishkan is destroyed in the context of the death of the battle in which the sons of Eli, or Eli himself, dies, namely the battle that we saw in Perek Dalet. That is part one. Ukeshemet Shmuel Ramati, when Shmuel Hanavi dies, Chorvanov, that same year that Shaul kills all of the Kohanim in Nov, is the year that Shmuel died. And then the Mizbeach went to Giv'on. Okay? Uktiv, now we get to our pasuk. Twenty years. What do I do with 20 years? Says the Gemara. Hani Eslim Shana. What are these 20 years? What do these years include? Eser Shana Shemalach Shmuel Beatzmo. 10 years of the story of Shmuel by himself before Shaul comes into the picture. Vishana Shamalach Shmuel Vishaul, 1 year in which they reigned together. Do you understand how the Gemara is going to interpret that pasuk in Parakid Gimel? Right, the 1 year of Shaul. Ushtaim Shamalach Shaul, the 2 years that Shaul reigned by himself. How many years are we up to? 13.
V'sheva de David. And 7 of the first 7 years of David HaMelech. Why? Because it says, V'hayamim asher malach David HaYisrael arba'im shana. It says that David HaMelech reigned for a total of 40 years. B'chevron malach sheva shanim. 7, his first 7 years, he was king in the capital, which was in Chevron. That was when he was still fighting Ishbosheth and Ben Shaul, right, when he was fighting the civil war and the kingdom was still split. And in the seventh year, after Shaul's war was over, they came to David and asked him to unite the kingdom. So he does, and he moves his capital from Hebron to Yerushalayim for reasons we'll study in Sefer Shmuel, and ultimately, therefore, begins his reign over the united kingdom of Israel for another 33 years. So in total, if I include the 10 years of Shaul, 10 years of Shmuel, 3 years of Shaul, and 7 of David, it's 20 years. Right. From there, the Gemara works backwards to calculate that the Mishkan stood in Shiloh for 369 years. But understand what the Medrash is suggesting. That the 20 years refers to what? And the 20 years refers to?
Total time from the
divine kingdom.
Till there's a temple or you.
Well, there isn't a temple, but until, remember what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says that the Aaron sat in Kiryat Ye'arim for 20 years. Who took the Aaron out of Kiryat Ye'arim? The Aaron leaves Kiryat Ye'arim when David HaMelech tries to move it to Yerushalayim. In Shmuel Bet Perek Vav. Take a look. Beginning of Shmuel Bet Perek Vav. Beginning of Perek Vav, Yosef od David et kol b'chu Yisrael 30 alef, v'yakom v'yelech David v'chol ha'am asher ito mi'ba'alei Yehuda la'alot misham et Aron ha'elokim shenikra shem Hashem tzvot yoshev ha'krevim alav. David, you have to go back one Perek. David, Perek Hey is when the people, after the war is over and David's forces win at the battle against the son of Shaul, that's, they come to him in Perek Hey and they say, okay, you reign over us all. If you look at the beginning of Perek Hey, Vayavo kol shivtei Yisrael al David Chevron, all the tribes of Israel came to David in Chevron. Vayamlu lemor, they said to him, Hinenu atzmacha u'psarcha anachna, we are one flesh and blood. Gam et mogam shoshol v'yot Shaul malach aleinu ata yita motzeh mevi et Yisrael. Even when we had Shaul, you were really loyal and you were our general. God had promised you that you would be the leader of Israel. So you be our king. Now look at Pasuk. This is good for us. Take a look at Pasuk Dalet. Perek Hey Pasuk Dalet. Duga, you asked me before about the authorship of Sefer Shmuel versus the authorship of Sefer Malachim in terms of style. Remember? Take a look at Pasuk Dalet. Ben 30 shana David bimolcho, 40 shana malach. You hear it? It was 30 years when he became king, and he reigned for 40 years. Sefer Shmuel. Bechevron malach ha-Yehuda 7 shanim, 6 chodeshim, uvisholayim malach 33 shana, ko Yisrov Yehuda. 7 years in Hebron, 33 years in Yerushalayim. Then in Perek Vav, what's the first thing he does after he conquers Yerushalayim, which is the end of Perek Hay? The first thing he does is he goes to Ba'ale Yehuda. What's Ba'ale Yehuda? Ba'ala or Ba'alata. Ba'al Yehuda is another name for Kiryat Ye'arim. And he brings the Aron out of Ba'alat or Ba'ale Yehuda, out of Kiryat Ye'arim, to bring it to Yerushalayim. We read this as a Haftorah because it's a famous story of Peret, Uzzah and Peret, who grabbed with the Aron. Was shaking, and they grabbed it, and they were killed. Right, we has Haftorah of Parshat Shemini in the story of Nadav and Avihu. Pasuk, let's take a look at pasuk Gimel. Vayarkivu et Aron Elokim al Agalah Chadasha vayisu'u mibeit Avinadav asher b'giva. Where was the Aron put? In the house of Avinadav in Giva. VeUzzah v'Achyo b'nei Avinadav noagim et Agalah Chadasha. And Uzzah was the one who grabbed hold of it. This is where the Aron is moved. Now it's moved, and because of the tragedy along the way, it never makes it to a mikdash. David HaMelech detours it to another place to hold on to it for a few more years until it's ready to go into a mikdash because of the story of Uzzah. But ideally, what he wanted to do is move it to Yerushalayim and begin the process of building a Beit HaMikdash. Perek Zion is next perek is where he asks the Navi for permission to build a mikdash. Right? Understand. So what's the Medrash suggesting? The Medrash is suggesting that these 20 years are the 20 years from the time the Aron was put into Kiryat Ye'arim until it was taken out. Mm-hmm. 10 years of Shaul, 3 years of Shaul, 7 years of David, and I have 20 years. So how do I read my Pasuk? Go back to Perek Zion. How do I read this Pasuk? Shmuel Aleph Perek Zion, I should say. Here's how I have to read the Pasuk. Vayhi miyom shevet Aaron b'kiyat Ye'arim vayirbu hayamim vayu asim shana. The Aaron is put in Kiryat Ye'arim. Until it is removed from Kiryat Ye'arim, it will take 20 years. It will sit in Kiryat Ye'arim for 20 years. Full stop. Now let's go back to our story. In our story, Vayinahu kol beit Yisrael achrei Hashem. In other words, the transition between the fall of Shiloh and the beginning of the tshuva process and Shmuel's rise to leadership is not 20 years. It's months. But into the story is interjected a historical piece of information that we need to know, but it's not relevant to the story. Namely, that the Aron is not going to leave Kiryat Ye'arim for 20 years. It's nothing to do with our story. Our story goes from one to the other. Beit Shemesh, Aron is removed. A couple of months later, the people are doing tshuva, and Shmuel comes into the scene. According to that interpretation, what's driving the tshuva?
They don't have a mikdash.
I'm not sure that's what's driving the tshuva.
They don't have a mishkan.
That's a fact. But what's driving the tshuva? It's not the 20 years of not having a mikdash. What's driving the tshuva?
Yeah, is that what I'm getting at? Here's the sequence of events. Perek Dalet, war with Plishtim, and they lose. Perek Hay, Galut Ha'aron. Perek Vav, Korban Beit Shemesh. Right? The fall of Beit Shemesh. 50,000, whatever the numbers are. The tragedy of Beit Shemesh. They put the Aron away. They put it away because it's too dangerous. They had it in Beit Shemesh, and look what happened. So it's too dangerous. Put it away. For how long is it going to be put away?
20 years.
That's part of my parenthetical aside.
It was in someone's house?
It was put, it was looked after, it was cared for. Yeah, that we dealt with. That's where the end of the last previous piece. Aaron is away. Back to story. What's the rest of the story? Right? The Aaron is in Beit Shemesh for 20 years. That's parenthetical. Now, back to the rest of the story. Perek Zion. Pasuk Bet. Vayinahu. Vayinahu. Acharei Hashem. What's driving the tshuva?
That they lost their independence and they.
Right. This what's driving the tshuva. The war with the Plishtim, the threat of the Plishtim, the fall of the Mishkan, the shock of Beit Shemesh. This is essentially shock treatment. This is Churban. This is the shock of the events of the destruction, the calamity, the fall of the threat of loss of independence. This, the entire description of everything that they've had in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel is the greatest threat to the life in Israel since the days of Yeshua. The Plishtim have reached to the heartland of Israel. The Mishkan has been destroyed. The Aron went into captivity. It's back, but it's now gone. Right? This is all immediately after all of this. Immediately after all of this, the people start doing tshuva. And from that perspective, what's driving the tshuva is the depth of the events that we have described. The punishment. The onesh of what has transpired is so severe that it drives tshuva. Go back to my cycle of Sefer Shoftim. Chet. Onesh. Tshuva, tshua, or se'aka, tshua, chet, all the avodah zarah leading up to onesh. What do we have? The tshuva, or the tefila, or the se'aka, the crying out of the people, in this case the tshuva, and then the rest of the parak, this is parak zayin, and this is parakim, this is the chet, is parak aleph, and bet, and gimel, and the onesh is dalet and hay. And what I have is a very structured sequence parallel to Sefer Shoftim. Nothing out of the ordinary. Everybody with me?
Mm-hmm.
It only begs one question. There are a few other textual issues, but conceptually this begs one question. Which is, if this is the cycle familiar to us from Sefer Shoftim,
then why isn't it in Sefer Shoftim?
A, why is it in Sefer Shoftim, which we talked about? But B,
yes. Where was Shmuel and Avi?
Well, Shmuel's here. The moment they start, Shmuel's there. The moment they cry out to Hashem, Shmuel.
Didn't he prevent the Chet and Onesh?
No, he's a child. Chet and the Onesh is back in is the beginning of the story. He's born because of in the context of the Chet and the Onesh. No, the issue is different. This is Shmuel's success. All intents and purposes, this tshuva breaks the cycle of Sefer Shoftim forever. In terms of the chet of Avodah Zarah, Baal, and Ashtoreth, etc. The basic question is, how come this succeeded where all of Sefer Shoftim failed? If the structure here is very similar, it's basically the same as we had in Sefer Shmuel, in Sefer Shoftim, then what is it about this story, about this particular onish, about this particular chet, or about this particular tshuva, or Shmuel's role that made this successful were all of Sefer Shoftim, every iteration essentially put out. You understand? So you could say, well, it was more successful, and because it was more successful, they took it out of Sefer Shoftim and put it into Sefer Shmuel. Maybe. But I still think that there's something here. The simplest answer is that in all of the cases of Sefer, of the iteration of Chet, Onesh, Tshuva, and Tshuva that we had in Sefer Shoftim, the Onesh was never as severe, and the Chet, and the Tshuva was never as complete, and therefore the Tshuva was never as significant. Probably comes down to the fact that the Mishkan is never destroyed. It's the depth of this destruction, the depth of this onesh, was so much more severe. It's like the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash sent us into exile. When we came back from the Babylonian exile, 7 years later, we came back without any idolatry. 400 years of idolatry in Tanakh, we go to Bava for 7 years, we come back, no idolatry, got rid of it. Why could 7 years of exile in Bava get rid of idolatry that 400 years in Eretz Yisrael could not? Because, at some point or another, it's a shock treatment. It's the patient's on life support. The patient's coded. Right? Cardiac arrest. What do? You take the paddles and you shock. This is the shock treatment. Okay? Option A. Understand.
How long did that shock treatment last?
In terms of very significant pieces, patterns of history, permanently. Yeah, idolatry essentially is a phenomenon of the Jewish world, is gone, caused by Korban by a chain. Other aspects in this case as well, we'll see. But understand, for this interpretation to work, the phrase about 20 years in Kiryat Yearim has to have been inserted after the fact, later. It's an editorial insert. There's no way that at the time of the events, they are writing that Kiryat Yearim, the Aron will stay in Kiryat Yearim for 20 years. Shmuel HaNavi dies before those 20 years are up. So Shmuel could not have written those words. And so there are three Nevi'im who write Sefer Shmuel. Shmuel writes up until his death, and then Natan and Gad, who are the Nevi'im, to the time of David HaMelech, finish the story. So this is an addition, an insertion later, after the fact, and it's a parenthetical insertion put there by the Nevi'im to tell us, okay, we're talking about the Aron, Kiryat Yearim, FYI, open parentheses, the Aron sat there for 20 years. Close parentheses, back to the story, after the destruction of Beit Shemesh, Vayinuhuko Beit Shalach Vayashah. To do that, come back to our chronology. 40 years of Eli, correct? Post Eli, I have Shmuel, Shaul, David, 7 years. Shaul, 3. Right? Post Eli, after Eli dies, the same year as the Churban of Shiloh, the same year as everything else. Shaul's reigns for 3 years. Ben Shana plus Shnei Shanim. David, 7. The Aron is removed from Kiryat Yearim. That leaves for the life and times of Shmuel HaNavi. How many years?
10 years.
10. Right, all of this is 20. This is 3. This is 7. Leaves me 10 years for the entire story of Shaul. Hence the Gemara said, Shaul is reigned for 10 years. That means that assuming, and here's the critical question, how old is Shmuel when he dies? Remember, he dies the same year that Shaul ends his campaign.
How old was he at the end of Eli's destruction of
Shaul? Okay. So, how old could he have been? At most
he could have been 40.
Correct. which means that at most, how old could he have been when he died?
53.
53 or 52 in this case, because of the 1 year old.
Okay.
At most. Assuming Shmuel is born the year Eli becomes a shofet. Do you remember the pasuk in Perek Aleph? That Eli was sitting on his throne? So Chazal say it means that Eli had ascended to the throne as a shofet on that day. Kohen Gadol from before. But he ascends as a shofet the day that Shechana comes into the Beit HaMikdash. At most, Shmuel is born the day that Eli becomes a shofet. That's the earliest you can put his birth. That makes him 52 at his death.
There's something like that in the Haggadah, that somebody's a Gilgal of Shmuel HaNavi, the one whose beard became white and he was
Kivin Shanim Shana, right?
And then it's, I think it comes out to be 52, that he was like, it was like 70 because the extra years were like Shmuel HaNavi.
Okay, maybe 52 added to Shmuel HaNavi. Yeah, that sounds very Haggadah. I have a hard time with Gugulim, so I'm going to leave Gugulim out of the picture. Okay?
However, take a look at Perek Chet. Next Pasuk. Next Perek, Pasuk Aleph. Perek Chet, Pasuk Aleph begins. Vayi Kasher Zaken Shmuel. 52. At most, he's 50 years old, right? This is the beginning of the story of Shaul. He's 49 or 50 at this point. Even in biblical terms, 49, 50 is not Kizaken Shmuel. Kizaken, when Yeshua was Zaken, he was 110. When Shmuel, when Moshe was Zaken, he was 120. Even in biblical terms, to describe somebody at the age of 49 or 50 as Vayi Kizaken Shmuel, that's a hard pill to swallow. So take a look at the Ralbag. I said to you earlier, there's a whole different school of thought of how to deal with these psukim. The Ralbag, Ababinel, a whole bunch of other possibilities.
Right? The alternative picture, the alternative option here, remember where our chronology problem starts from. What are my two anchor points? Yitziat Mitzrayim till Yiftach is 300 years. Yiftach to Beis HaMikdash is 140 years. Correct? I'm sorry, 340. That was where my problem started.
Comes along the Abarbanel and the Rabag and many of the other Mefarshim, and they come up with an alternative solution. Instead of squeezing all the events of Sefer Shmuel into the 16 years in between and taking these 20 years and spanning them over multiple generations, changing the flow of the story, come up with a different solution, which is second paragraph. Or the interpretation is, read the story straight. Read this pasuk in sequence. Be'chemesh, Kiryat Yarim, and now in Kiryat Yarim, the Aron, by the time the Aron was there for 20 years, 20 years later, they began to pine and yearn for God. The way we read it originally. If that's the case, the Aron sat for more than 20 years in Kiryat Yarim. Based on simple chronology, the Aron sat in Kiryat Yarim, if I take this interpretation, at least 37 years. Right? Instead of squeezing Sefer Shmuel into 20 years or 16 years, a different solution. The 40 years of Shimshon, remember Shimshon? And the 40 years of Eli don't have to be sequential. What if they're in parallel? Remember the book of Shoftim, it doesn't tell us who's when. It just tells us how long each Shofet lasted, or reigned for, or ruled for, or led. But the Shoftim are regional. If the Shoftim are regional, it doesn't mean that they're sequential. There's no national Malchus. So the events of Yiftach could parallel the events of Shimshon, and the events of Shimshon could parallel the events of Eli. We could be talking about the same 40 years, backwards and forwards. Ulefia perusha zeyitachen shiyu yemei chayei Shmuel betachlita kamo shishim v'chamisha shanim. Right, then I have more years to play with Shmuel's life. Then Shmuel starts earlier, and Shmuel could be 65 years old, he could be 70 years old. Right? When he talks about Shmuel being old, I'm not bound to circumscribe the story of Sefer Shmuel into those 20 years. I'm not limited anymore. I don't know how long it all takes, but it could take, it could span a much longer period of history. This is a whole different approach. This basically says that what's not, instead of squeezing, if I take these 140 years and I throw 40 of Eli, 40 of Shimshon, 40 of David, 7 of Shlomo, sorry, 40 of David, 7 4 of Shlomo, and into the remaining 16 years I squeeze all of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, instead of doing it that way, what I could do instead is expand this. This is much more fluid. Yiftach said to the king of Ammon, where have you been for 300 years? First of all, 300 years can mean talking about tens of years, we're talking about double digit years here. 300 years could easily be 270 years. If it was 270 years, could Yiftach have said, where have you been for the last 300 years? Sure. Right. When you're dealing in hundreds, rounding off to the nearest 50 is not unreasonable. So the 300 year reference by Shlomo, by Yiftach, could be approximately 300 years, in which case I could gain another 20, 30 years just by rounding off the numbers. Number one. Number two, I can overlap Yiftach, Shimshon, Eli. They could all be overlapped. In which case I have many more years to play. If I backdate Eli, Shmuel is older, and then I can squeeze those 20 years into the middle of the story. And then my story reads. War with the Plishtim. Aaron goes to the Plishtim. Aaron comes back to Beit Shemesh. Devastation of Beit Shemesh. Aaron goes to Kiryat Yearim. And then instead of a parenthetical aside, oh, and by the way, it's going to stay there for 20 years. Instead of a parenthetical aside, then I have the key piece, which is, and there it stays, by Yibu Hayamim. Years pass by. By Yisrim Shana. 20 years later. What's driving the tshuva now? What's driving the tshuva, according to the Barbanel and according to the Rabbah, now I have a whole different story. Because what's driving the tshuva is not the depths of the onesh. How severe was this onesh, worse than any other onesh they ever experienced in Sefer Shoftim and break the cycle? And that way. Now it's a different issue. What broke? What's driving the tshuva here?
It's not the Aram. What's driving the tshuva here?
They don't have a they don't have a leader.
They don't have a leader. It's 20 years of what? What's going on in those 20 years?
Probably idol worship.
Torah's Yarim, and nobody's going there.
Nothing. No Mishkan. No Aram. No leader. No nothing. 20 years. The only thing we know in those 20 years is that they're still at war with the Pushtim.
So what woke them up?
That. Nothing drives change more than a period of feeling the absence. It's not the shock of the battle, but it's the feeling of the void. And it takes time till the sense of void sinks in. That's the parallel to the 70 years exile in Galut Bavel. Didn't happen overnight. It took a generation. It took a generation born after the in the aftermath of the destruction of Shiloh. It took a generation born to wake up and say, no, this isn't working. We need to change. The generation that went through it, they're done. 20 years later is a new generation. 20 years later, a void and absence generates a yearning that I don't have in Sefer Shoftim. And all that happened in Sefer Shoftim, they could always go back to the Mishkan. They could always go. It was always business as usual. 20 years of total gap in the aftermath of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, business as usual has stopped for 20 years. Now I have a year. They're still idolatrous. They're still working. They're still going to their idols. Shmuel will eventually come and say, "No, you have to stop that too." But they don't know what they're doing. They don't have the sophistication to say, "Okay, Aaron was destroyed, Mishkan was destroyed. That means we have to do tshuva." They're not thinking like that. It doesn't say they did tshuva. What does it say they did after 20 years?
They yearned.
They pined. They wanted something. They don't know what they want. It's not an immediately aftermath of the Battle of Beit Shemesh and the Aron is captured. Then I know exactly what I want. They have to do tshuva, klap hachay, go to shul. This is 20 years later. They don't know what they want.
Who was the leadership at the time?
None. Till they begin the process. Once they open the door, into that door steps, through that door steps, Shmuel. But it takes that yearning. It takes that desire, that pining, that void, that sense that something in my life is missing. And I don't know what it is. That's a different experience.
Well, it's a realization that the route they're following is leading them nowhere.
Right. But it takes years to wake up that, for them to wake up. This is not shock treatment. First interpretation is this is shock treatment. Churban tshuva. This isn't shock treatment. This is a new generation that wakes up and says, we've got to change direction. And that, I think, is why the tshuva that Shmuel leads is more effective than every process of tshuva in all of Sefer Shoftim. Transformational for generations to come. Because it's driven by a different yearning. It's driven by a different issue. It's not the chet onesh that's driving it, but it's being driven by a genuine desire to fill the void with something substantive. And that, I think, is the power of this interpretation. It's very analogous. There's a lot of analogies to it. Correct. We are going to stop here. Zat Hashem.